From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. When the lights are dimmed in workplaces around the country, another shift goes to work.
And he said, Maria, why are you so mad? What am I doing wrong? It's just a caress. I'm just being affectionate. I told him, I'm going to spray this cleaner in your eyes.
Coming up on Reveal, sexual violence against women janitors. There's a group of workers who are practically invisible to most of us. They come in under the cover of night and bring order and cleanliness to the buildings that many of us work in, the janitors. They're an essential part of our work lives that we, the general public, rarely engage with. For the past 18 months, we teamed up with PBS Frontline, Univision, our radio partner KQED, and the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley. Through that investigation, we uncovered a powerful pattern of sexual abuse among the women who clean the malls where you shop, the banks where you do business, and the offices where you work. Sasha Coca from KQED was a part of our team and brings us this story that we're calling Rape on the Night Shift.
The lights go out as the daytime office workers leave the building. And then, room by room, they flicker back on. Three stories of glass light up like a shadow play. The silhouettes of janitors appear on different floors, one polishing a window, another mopping. Outside, two women hide behind a palm tree, watching.
Mira, pero allá está el basurero.
Vicky Marquez is less than 5 feet tall, with heels on. Veronica Alvarado has tattoos and green highlights streaking through her hair.
Look, do you see him? There's a guy walking. He's passing the vacuum in the second floor.
The women are casing this office park in suburban Orange County, about an hour south of Los Angeles. They're undercover investigators with a tiny nonprofit that's trying to root out abuses in the cleaning industry.
So we're walking around the building to see the possible entryways.
They'll sometimes wait for janitors near garbage dumpsters or inside bathroom stalls.
Pero no corras porque causa sospecha. Y es que como hay cámaras por todos lados.
Don't run, says Marquez. That makes us look suspicious to the security cameras.
Magia, magia, magia.
Magic, magic, says Alvarado. The door is still unlocked.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
¿Cómo está?
On this night, they find janitors who work 7 days a week without overtime, others who have to buy their own cleaning supplies. But once in a while, they'll meet a woman who confides a darker secret, that she's being sexually abused on the job. Our investigation found that sexual violence is a problem at janitorial companies across the nation, from tiny mom-and-pop shops to big corporations, from companies that operate off the books to those with shares traded on the New York Stock Exchange. ABM is the nation's largest janitorial company. It's among a rare group of 15 American corporations that have been sued at least three times by the federal government for failing to protect workers from sexual harassment. ABM employs nearly 65,000 janitors. They clean major airports, city halls, courthouses, and towering office buildings across the country. That's the company Maria Magaña used to work for. Magaña is a tiny woman in her 50s. She's practically dwarfed by the giant vacuum cleaner she straps onto her back. She's been cleaning office buildings in California for nearly two decades. We went on the job with her one night.
I couldn't leave it dirty. I dust most of the things. I even dust the signs. All these little windows, I clean them.
Magaña even uses a plastic fork to scrape the dust out from the crevices in the windowsills. The next day, we went to Magaña's house. Even though she was tired from cleaning late at night, she wanted us to come early in the morning before the neighbors woke up, because she didn't want them to know what we were there to talk to her about. But when we got to her street on the rural edge of Bakersfield, the neighbors were already playing music and drinking coffee on their front steps.
Hello. Buenos días, tardes.
Still, Magaña wanted to tell us her story. She says her supervisor at ABM used to harass her. When she started talking about that, she was much more comfortable in Spanish.
Entonces fue cuando le pegué con la escoba y dice, ay.
So I hit him with my broom and he said, María, why are you so mad? What am I doing wrong? It's just a caress. I'm just being affectionate.
Entonces,
I told him, you get any closer entonces, and I'll hit you with the handle right now.
Le dije, se acerca y le pego
I told him, I'm going to spray this cleaner in your eyes.
Le voy a echar spray en los ojos.
But he didn't stop. And in 2005, Magaña says he raped her.
Aquí es.
She took us to the bank building where she says it happened.
Cada vez que paso por este banco, me recuerda.
Every time I come to pass by this bank, I remember what happened.
Por eso trato de no pasar por esta calle. Le doy la vuelta.
That's why I agreed to let you take me. So I could help remind women they should work in places that are well lit.
Traten de ir a lugares donde están más iluminados y que nunca trabajen solas, trabajen con compañeras. Yeah. Okay.
The building was closed, but she peered in through the tinted glass door.
Detrás de esas escaleras que están allí está el cuarto.
Behind the stairs is the conference room where that man tricked me, got me into that room.
Con engaños me metió a ese cuarto.
He shoved me as soon as I walked in and raped me.
Y él abusó de mí.
Magaña went to the bathroom, cleaned herself up, and finished working her shift.
Did you have sex with Maria Magaña against her will at the ABM worksite?
No.
3 years later, government lawyers deposed Jose Vasquez, the man Magaña says raped her.
Did you rape Maria Magaña at the ABM worksite?
No.
The deposition was part of a class action lawsuit involving 21 women, including Maria Magaña. It was brought by the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That's the federal agency charged with protecting workers from discrimination. Anna Park was in charge of the case against ABM.
We did not believe they did all they could, and they allowed these women for years to be abused.
She says this was one of the worst cases of sexual harassment she had ever seen and showed how the company failed to follow its own procedures.
Any good company will say, let's investigate this. Who else is affected? What else is going on? That didn't happen here.
The lawsuit claimed that ABM failed to protect the women from harassment and assault in the workplace. 14 harassers were named. A dozen of the plaintiffs pointed to one man, Supervisor Jose Vasquez. The EEOC found some witnesses, too. Scott Stevenson was volunteering one night at a fundraising dinner at a church in Bakersfield.
Sent some kids out to take some trash to the dumpster, and they came back with the trash. They thought somebody was hurt in the dumpster area. So I went to go investigate, see what was going on, and there was what I believed was a sexual assault taking place right in front of us.
He saw a janitor he recognized as Jose Vasquez near the dumpster.
No, I recall the belt not being buckled all the way on his pants. Remember that jingling?
He says Vasquez was standing in front of another janitor, a woman.
His arms were spread out almost like a starfish, so he was preventing her from leaving that area. Every attempt she made, he would grab her or grope her to get her back in front of him. She was crying. She was in tears. She had that help me look on her face.
Stevenson threw the trash into the dumpster.
It made a bang.
Startling Jose Vasquez, Stevenson called the police, and in their report, the woman said she was frightened. But when the police asked Vasquez to come to the station a few days later, he showed up with the woman. They both said they had just been playing around. The police dropped their investigation, but the church sent a letter to ABM reporting what Stevenson had seen.
There's no way that could have been consensual. I've never seen anybody have a romantic interlude by a maggot-smelling dumpster.
But ABM never interviewed Stevenson. A few months later, the company got two anonymous letters alleging that Vasquez was touching and harassing women and that he had a criminal record. Help us, said one letter. Please send someone to investigate. But at his deposition, Vasquez testified that ABM didn't ask him about the letters.
Nobody from ABM talked to you about sexual harassment allegations in or around September of 2005, correct?
No, sir, nobody did.
And the company hadn't checked his background when he was hired. Vasquez was a convicted rapist on California's sex offender registry. Government lawyers deposed Timothy Brecky, then a regional vice president for ABM.
What's your overall question?
Well, please. I'm putting the exhibit in front of you to remind you that he was convicted of rape by force.
I see that, yes.
Brecky admitted the company's human resources department didn't notice that when Vasquez filled out his job application, he left the question about criminal history blank.
So the question is, do you think it was a good idea to put someone who was convicted of rape by force supervising women alone in buildings at night?
No.
But Brecky asked why the women didn't report their alleged attacks to ABM. For example, Maria Magana stayed on the job with Jose Vasquez for a year and a half after she says he assaulted her.
How these things were not reported in a timely manner, how there was no medical kind of backup to some of this, some of these things, I just need to have more information.
So it's the fault of the women?
Objection. Mm. Argumentative. You may answer.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
ABM didn't admit wrongdoing, but settled the case in 2010. The 21 women, including Maria Magana, were awarded a total of nearly $6 million.
¿No quieres su café?
No.
Ven, mira.
5 years later, Magana still lives in a cramped house in Bakersfield, taking care of her elderly mother and teenage son. She's the only income earner and says that's a big reason why she kept working at ABM so long after her attack. She still works as a full-time janitor and says she's uncomfortable spending the settlement money from the case.
Me pueden dar miles y miles, pero yo hasta la fecha no puedo.
They can give me thousands and thousands of dollars. But to this day, I can't spend the money with joy because I see it as dirty. That money won't ease my pain, that filthy stain on my heart from that man who marked
me.
It won't change the past or clean how dirty I feel.
As for Jose Vasquez, he was never charged with any crimes related to the ABM case. We tracked him down, but it wasn't easy.
Okay, I'm not walking into that. Hi, Pooch. Hi, puppy.
Because of his previous rape conviction, he's on California's sex offender registry. But when we went to that address, he'd moved without notifying authorities.
Hello?
We finally found him at a new house, but he didn't want to be recorded. He said he started his own cleaning company, and he wanted to put the ABM case behind him. Some of those women, he told us, were just money hungry. A few months after settling the EEOC case, ABM was featured on national television, a show called Undercover Boss. ABM portrayed itself as a company that takes a lot of pride in its workers.
Each week, we follow the boss of a major corporation as they go undercover in their own company.
ABM's CEO at the time, Henrik Slipsager, posed as an immigrant looking for work as a janitor.
The boss will trade in his well-manicured lawn and private tennis court for rolls of toilet paper and a squeegee.
Rub it.
On the show, a woman janitor taught him how to clean toilets.
You like it, right?
I love it. Yes, I tell you, I love it. Yes.
She had only one complaint about the company.
One thing probably ABM could do better is have women wear pants, you know, because, like, if I have to run around, bend over, I got to make sure somebody else, excuse my language, doesn't see my butt behind me or something like that, you know?
In the end, impressed with her work ethic, Slipsager gave her a new uniform, a pair of pants instead of a dress. Slipsager and other ABM officials declined our repeated requests for an interview. Just before deadline, they sent us their own videotaped statement.
Hi, my name is Miranda Tolar, and I'm ABM's Deputy General Counsel for Employment Law.
Tolar outlined ABM's commitment to a safe work environment, including sexual harassment training for employees and a hotline where they can report concerns or complaints in 100 languages.
We believe that our policies and procedures are the gold standard in the industry. Our systems work. In some cases, we have been made aware of inappropriate behavior and taken action. In other cases, allegations of wrongdoing have proven to be false and even malicious, often by individuals previously in consensual relationships that ended.
ABM also sent us a letter saying our reporting is focusing on older cases and the company has improved their policies and practices since the EEOC case was settled. But our investigation found lawsuits filed as recently as May 2015, where janitors say ABM didn't protect them from harassment and abuse. In some of the cases, women say they were fired for complaining. And the company continues to fight harassment cases aggressively, even after they lose at trial.
To this day, we are still fighting. They don't want to accept reality. They don't want to lose.
Maria Bojorquez is the mother of five and a grandmother. She says she was raped while working the night shift at the San Francisco Ferry Building. ABM investigated, but found her allegations inconclusive. Bojorquez sued ABM, and in 2012, a jury awarded her more than $800,000. The company is appealing. When they went to court in May, ABM's attorney told the judges her testimony wasn't credible.
She said, "I was sexually harassed on an ongoing basis for many months, but there was not a single other witness who ever saw any alleged misconduct toward..."
Well, would we expect another witness in a nighttime shift on a janitorial service where he's the foreman and she's assigned to a particular area?
There are times that they are alone, but there are also times there are other janitors who are working in that same building.
ABM's lawyer admitted, though, that their workers aren't always safe.
I mean, ABM and its parents, because they're also being sued, have tens of thousands of employees located across the United States and internationally, many who work in remote locations at night with minimal supervision. Bad things sometimes happen.
But is there a way to prevent bad things from happening? How about the federal agency charged with ensuring workplace health and safety?
My name is Jordan Barab. I'm Deputy Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA.
So if someone is raped at work, is that considered an unsafe work environment?
Clearly it's an unsafe environment if somebody is raped at work.
According to estimates from the Justice Department, about 50 workers a day are sexually assaulted or raped on the job. But OSHA doesn't recognize rape as a widespread hazard. Until our interview, sexual violence against janitors wasn't something OSHA had on its radar screen.
Has OSHA ever taken on a case involving rape in the workplace?
Not that I'm aware of.
It absolutely is a health and safety question. Yeah, I'm a little baffled by that.
Lilia Garcia Brower heads up the team of grassroots investigators we met earlier, called the Maintenance Cooperation Trust Fund. It's a joint effort by the Service Employees Union and some big cleaning companies, including ABM, that are undercut by outfits operating in the underground economy.
That's probably the number one competitor for responsible businesses are the companies who are paying cash, not paying taxes, not carrying workers' comp. And frankly, you know, those are types of cases where we've seen unreported rape and the more serious, you know, violent, physically violent crimes.
Hello.
Hola, Vicky.
Hola. Voy aquí, Vero, por la presidio ahorita.
Vicky Marquez and Veronica Alvarado signal each other with their headlights. They're driving around office building parking lots at night, looking out for janitors. But there are only a handful of these undercover teams, focused on a few cities in California and Massachusetts. Sexual violence has become part of the national conversation. Universities, the military, they've had to publicly acknowledge the problem. But there are some 2 million janitors in the U.S., the people who scrub our toilets and vacuum our floors. They can also be victims of rape, but they're invisible to most of us, working on the night shift.
That's Sasha Coca of KQED. And employees themselves are pushing for better working conditions for women janitors. More time cleaning, more female supervisors, even moving their shifts to daytime when more people are around. Another member of our reporting team reveals Bernice Yearng is with us now to tell us more. Bernice, this story is really hard to take. I would love to hear there's some hope that can come out of this. I mean, what can the public do to help?
Right. I think the most important thing for us is to be aware and to ask questions, because these are really some of the most invisible workers out there. Also, there's a lot of subcontracting in this industry. So you can ask, you know, who is actually going to be in my building? Who is going to be cleaning? Kind of follow the trail to make sure that you're familiar with who the management and who the workers actually are. Because ultimately, janitorial work is a business. And what we heard time and time again is that the client, and that is you, is important to the janitorial company.
What about the workers? I mean, what's the biggest takeaway from them in terms of what they can do to prevent this from happening?
That's really clear. I mean, reporting the problem is crucial, but it's also such an incredibly hard thing to do. The estimates are that only 1/3 of sexual assault or rape victims actually report the crime. One of the most memorable stories that we came across was a woman named Erica Morales. She was actually the woman who launched that big government case against ABM, the company that you just heard about. She was a cleaner in Bakersfield, California, and she said she was sexually harassed and assaulted by her supervisor, and she quit. But she went to the federal government, and that's what ended up launching that lawsuit that you heard about. The case included 21 women, and the company settled for almost $6 million.
If the person that you specifically have to report to is the person who's doing the crime, you know, what steps can you take around it?
Well, if there's an anonymous hotline, that's a really important step. But I think also just starting to document and talk to people that you feel comfortable with. Even talking to a coworker will help. Those individuals can vouch for you when you are ready to kind of make that formal complaint.
In your reporting, if someone brought forth a case and they were undocumented, what was the likelihood of them being sent back?
That was a huge, huge concern for so many of the workers that we talked to. And I think to some extent, those who are abusing them are aware of that dynamic. But the good news is that there is a thing called the U visa. So when individuals assist with the investigation of a crime, such as a sexual assault, such as a rape, there is the possibility that they could apply for this special visa so that they can stay in the country to continue to assist with the prosecution if it goes that far.
So Erica Morales, the woman who launched the big government case, how's she doing now? Have you caught up with her since all that happened?
We have. She's actually a really popular radio personality on a Spanish language internet station in Bakersfield.
Hey, 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 my beautiful people. ¿Cómo están por ahí? Muy buenas tardes.
Recently, she told her audience that she had been sexually harassed at work. We were actually there in the studio with her, and we can play a little clip of how that happened. You can hear in her voice that she's really, really emotional about it.
Para mí fue muy difícil poderlo compartir al aire.
You know, she's never said any of this on air before. She's apologizing for getting emotional, but it's really something that she's still trying to overcome. We stayed with her through the show, and it was really interesting because her phone started buzzing off the hook with all of these messages of support, and she was shocked. She thought she was going to be judged, but all she got was support.
An incredible story. Thanks for bringing it to us, Bernice. Bernice Young is a reporter with Reveal. She's written more about what all of us can do to keep workers safe. You can find that at revealnews.org. Finally, another member of our team for Rape on the Night Shift reveals Daffodil Altan. She's going to tell us more about how that story was reported. While she was trying to find women who were assaulted and asking them to talk about their experiences, Daffodil realized she had someone who could help her very close to home.
We were starting to try to vet their stories, and we were relying on court documents, on police documents. And as I was having these conversations with some of these women, they started to feel a little bit familiar. They were monolingual, most of them Spanish speakers. And I would call them, and we would really talk about other things, not specifically about the assaults, because it's a traumatic event. And so we would have conversations, and they were going through a lot in their lives. And I was like, this reminds me of my conversations with my mom. And then it sort of went off like a bell, like, wait a second, my mom was a janitor. I know that.
And recently you talked to your mom, right, about that period in her life. Let's take a listen.
I worked night shift, 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock. It was very stressful job.
So you had to clean the mechanics' bathrooms?
Yes, mechanic bathrooms. And very filthy, dirty, and disgusting.
she starts telling me stories about what it was like at night that are essentially corroborating what I'm hearing. So I was in early years in high school, and what I understood was that my mom would get ready at 9 o'clock at night and leave at 10 and wouldn't be back till 6 in the morning. And as a kid, you're just kind of, you don't think about the work lives of your parents. You don't think about what happens during those 8 hours or 9 hours at night. And I never had. I just knew that I didn't like it.
I'm wondering, like, how did this change the way you looked at your mom a little bit?
Well, I think one of the things that changed was when I actually was able to ask her, I said, has anything like this ever happened to you?
What happened?
She was so mean to me, always sent me to work in hard places.
You know, and then she told me that there was a supervisor who had followed her around and was asking for things from her, and she didn't want to give in. You know, he was aggressive, he was flirting, and what he did was he then made her clean bathrooms for the entire shift.
Because he liked me so much. Ugly as can be, short and fat. And I have a handsome husband at home, so how am I going to look up at somebody like that? So I told him, I come to work not to look for a boyfriend because I have my husband at home. And he was so mean to me. All the time he gave me the hard work, all the hardest place I can do. And in my Monday, always give me bathrooms to clean. Only bathrooms, because he was so mad to me.
And then she figured out somehow that she could complain to the union, and she filed the complaint. And I said, how did you figure this out? Was there a hotline? Did somebody give you that information? She said, no, I just figured it out on my own. You know, she was vulnerable out there. And because she was doing so much for us at home, when she got home, she didn't talk about work. She got the lunches ready. She made sure we all were going to go to school. And so it makes me realize that, you know, some of these victims that are in the stories, they have kids that we've met, and the kids remind me a lot of what we were like.
A big chunk of the story is about working moms, and you're a working mom.
You know, one of the most powerful things that comes out of my work and this experience is that my mom was doing the work that she was doing to make sure that I would be able to do work that I wanted to do. She didn't want to be a janitor. Now that I'm a working mom, it's going to be important for my daughter to see that I'm doing work that will hopefully help other people.
And it sort of feels like your mom laid down the foundation so you wouldn't have to do that type of work, and also so your daughter wouldn't.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of the women who we were meeting and, you know, who participated in these projects, that's what they were trying to do for their kids.
Daffodil Altan is a producer for Reveal. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Check back with us next Tuesday for another podcast. We'll be looking at some of the hidden dangers factory workers face from chemicals in our electronic devices. And remember, we're also on the air. Check with your local public radio station to see what time they're airing us. And if there aren't, you have to let them know that they've got to air Reveal. Al Letson would sincerely appreciate it. This episode was edited by Deb George with production help from Amy Walters. Thanks to our editor, Andy Donahue, for his work on the story. Special thanks also to Lowell Bergman and Andres Sediel from the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley. Our lead sound designer and engineer is my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs. Our editorial director is Robert Saladay, and our managing director is Krista Scharfenberg. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music today was provided by Camarado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.